Did you know you can save up to 70% on the best brands just by shopping at FromRebel.com? We're talking about strollers, car seats, high chairs, espresso machines, cookware, everything you need for way less. Here's how it works. Every single day, Rebel drops thousands of new products on the site for up to 70% off. It is a constant stream of endless deals from top brands like Upa Baby, Nuna, Baby Bjorn, Breville, Nespresso, KitchenAid, Le Creuset, and more. But you have to act fast because every deal is one of a kind. So if you see something you love, make sure you add to cart fast. So stop paying full price when you don't have to. Whether it's baby gear, kitchen upgrades, or a treasure for your home you didn't know you needed, Rebel has it for way less, up to 70% less. Shop from Rebel.com and save big.
Stay safe on the roads with Rain-X Vision Beam Wiper Blades, now at Menards. For over 40 years, Rain-X has provided drivers with products to outsmart the elements. Their Vision Beam Wiper Blades are easy to install and are designed to provide a smooth, streak-free wipe every time. Save big money on all Rain-X products now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, and you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and Dr. Mark Goulston. Welcome to everybody. It's lovely to have you with us today with our very, very special guest, Jennifer Hill. Mark, I'll let you do the honours because I think we both know Jennifer, but you've known her a bit longer than me.
Well, I've known Jennifer for some years, and she and I met when she was at a low point in her life. And she got through it and she got past it. She's well on her way to getting over it, because a lot of times when we go through low points, we just race like heck to get away from it. Mm-hmm. And more often we get past it than we get over it. And sometimes getting over it is a lifelong journey. And so I met her at that point. And she's this really force of nature in terms of just her energy, what she's into, wanting to spiritually uplift the world and heal it. And she's unstoppable. And I'm glad that she's on because she's also the person who introduced JJ and I. And I'm forever thankful for that.
Yeah, me too.
And I thought also one of the things that JJ, Jennifer, and I have in common is we've all had low points. Mm. And if you're listening in, some of you may have been through a low point. Some of you may be in a low point. And when you're at the lowest of your low point, you often can't see a way out. You know, sometimes you don't know how you're going to make it through the day. But all of us are here to hopefully share what that was like and how we made it through and what helped us. And so, so welcome my dear friend, Jen, and my becoming a dear friend, JJ. It's always good to see you and make you cry.
Oh, yeah, there will be tears. I promise you there will be tears. There have been every single show that we've recorded here. But yeah, so Jen, I know that you came on my show on at UK Health Radio, and maybe people will remember that. And I remember you called yourself something which I thought was great. It was a recovering, what was it again?
A recovering jerk.
Yeah.
Mark even helped me. We were working on a title for a memoir I'm working on, and we were sitting down having lunch one day in LA, and Mark said, Jen, I have your book title. I said, bring it, Mark. Obviously, the man has written many, many best-selling books. And he said, bitch in recovery. I'm like, okay, fair enough. Not a bad title.
No, but you have gone on to do extraordinary things in your life. But you aren't shy about talking about the very, very low points. And so I wondered if you could just share with us what that was like, you know, what brought you to that point, and how did you get out of that?
Well, JJ, there have been so many low points in my life. And it, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about being a human being is, you know, you have a low point and you think, I am never going to survive this. And then you do. And then you might go 5, 10 years, a year, depending on how fortunate you are. And then you get hit and sideswiped by another tsunami of low points. And then somehow or another, you pick yourself back up. And I think the biggest difference, JJ and Mark, between where I am now and where I was, say, 20 years ago when I first tried to commit suicide, the first time I think I was 18 years old. And I don't say it in a cavalier way. I mean, the first time I took a whole entire box of Somanex when I was 18 years old. And thank God it was a true miracle and a blessing that my car was parked halfway off a cliff. I didn't know where I was or who I was. I was hallucinating. The box of sleeping pills didn't kill me, but I was hallucinating, and a friend of mine, I was 17 or 18 at the time, happened to be driving by looking at property and found me wandering almost off the side of a cliff and brought me to my mom in a hospital. And that was one of three attempts between the ages of, I think it was 17 and 21, that I tried to take my own life. So to answer your question, JJ, the difference is between then and now was having wonderful mentors in my life, like Mark, who really did. When I went through one of the second darkest times of my entire life, it was my divorce and selling my first company when I was about 38 years old. And I literally did not think I was going to survive it. And Mark and I had many a meeting in his office in West LA that was down the street from my house. And I would just be shaking and in tears and say, Mark, I can't do it. And Mark would just remind me, Jen, what are you running from? What are you running from? What do you want to run towards? And, you know, the thing is, having mentors, having tools, being able to have wonderful radio shows and podcasts and to know that you're not alone, I think that's the thing that makes it easier to get up on a day where you just want to curl up in a ball and die. And you're like, God, I can't, you know, God, source, universe. You know, that's the thing that helps me to get up now. And I remember very clearly when Mark and I were working together, I was going through this divorce and my ex-husband would actually come with Mark and I and sit there, and he was blown away by Mark. He was a hard guy to impress. And he said, that man has his stuff together. And the day I formally asked my ex-husband for a divorce, October 24th, after having been separated for 3 months, I was beside myself. Like, I wrote this letter and I read him verbatim this letter over the phone. He was with his brother because I wanted to be sure he had support. And I said, you know, we both deserve to find our one, and we're just not good for each other anymore. And about 7 days after that, because I remember it was Halloween evening, October 31st, I used to run a group called Gratitude Girls in Los Angeles, where a bunch of girlfriends would get together. And, you know, you do what you try to do. You have a cocktail and try to put on a friendly face. And I got home that night, and I would sometimes take Ambien to help me sleep. And I had enough Ambien that I could have killed myself that night. I remember I was just on my hands and knees, crushed. I mean, if it hadn't been for the work that Mark and I had done together of helping me reconnect to myself and my values, I just remember thinking, what have I done with my life? I had this handsome husband. You know, we had three homes, I had everything going for me, and yet I wanted to die more than anything else. And it was only because of Mark's mentorship and the deep friendships that I had that I chose to pray and scream and fight with God instead. And I just restricted, and it took every ounce of courage I had not to kill myself that night.
Wow. Wow. And then, yep. Mark, sorry.
You just said, can you unpack the pray and scream at God? Because the reason being is because they, you know, there was a lot of, I mean, Freud's gotten a bad rap for good reasons, but, you know, he did say that depression was anger turned inward. And if there's a way to turn the anger outward, away from ourselves, that doesn't mean we should be hurtful to other people, although we can scream at whoever we want in the privacy of our own mind or of our own thing. But could you say a little bit more about that? Because that anger, if it goes in different directions, it can be really destructive. And, you know, and part of what this show is about is hurt less, live more. And one of the things that a lot of people do to hurt less is they get angry. They get hurtful. So could you unpack that a little bit? When you maybe turned a corner and you decided, you know, I'm not going to kill myself, I'm going to live.
Yeah, Mark, I'm so grateful. Along with you, it's been a long journey of 20 plus years now of diving into spirituality and understanding of the self and just trying to make sense of the world and everyone in it, myself included. And at that moment, Mark, I remembered something one of my Kabbalistic teachers had said, David Guillaume, and he said, you know, you're allowed to fight with God. And I had some key choice words for God in that moment. I remember the liberty of when David first told me you could argue with God. I was like, what spiritual, you know, discipline tells you that you can argue with God? Though in that moment, when it's like you have a bottle of sleeping pills, in this case, Ambien, on the counter, 40 of them or whatever it was, that would have been enough to do the trick. And then you are down on your knees and you're just shaking and sobbing. And I was so enraged at all the pain, not just in that moment though, Mark and JJ, it's not that moment, right? We all know it's not that one moment. It's everything in your life that has led up to that moment, feeling like a failure, feeling like you disappointed your parents, you know, going through, it was the finality of here I just formally asked my ex-husband for a divorce. And it was the, you know, I'll never, ever, all those things we all tell ourselves, I will never, ever, dot, 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 get a divorce, dot, 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 do this. And so I was just screaming and angry. And I just released all of, the word I would use is anguish, just that extraordinary soul-crushing anguish that I felt at the unfairness of life and of the cards that you're dealt. And yet I remember waking up the day after that and being so grateful. It's like you're walking such a thin tightrope. Anybody who's ever been close to committing suicide knows what it's like, where on the one hand, all it takes is just going a centimeter, a millimeter to the left, and you fall off the edge. And then on the right, you hear your mentors in your head, the Marks of the world and my Kabbalah teacher and all of my wonderful mentors. And I think had I not had such strong relationships with the people in my life, like my mentors, and also by that point, because I had developed a relationship with what I considered Source that gave me the freedom to scream and yell and to just till I was exhausted until I just passed out. And then the next day to wake up and go, thank God. Thank God. I was this close and I didn't. Thank God.
You just triggered a memory. And I'll just share it. And then JJ, I want to hear from you. Both my parents have died and they could be difficult and they could be really difficult with each other. And they lived on the East Coast and I've lived on the West Coast of America for a long time now. And I remember years ago when they'd come to visit, I'd pick them up at the airport. And as soon as we're in their car, they're either bickering or they're sullen or whatever. And all I'm thinking about is I want to drive them back to the airport. You know, and really it was, and here was the transformational moment. So I'm getting back to the anger in anguish, anguish, and I was so angry at them because I just wanted them to just stop it already, you know. I mean, I was looking forward to you coming here, and here we go again. I'm thinking that, and then something inside me said, "Don't hate them. Hate the way you feel."
Mm.
I don't know where it came from. And I thought, oh, I'm not angry at them. I hate the way I feel. And the more that I could just say that, the calmer I got. Mm. And the calmer I get, the more upset my parents are that I'm calm. Because I think they'd been saving it up, you know, we're going to go visit our son and he's going to be our free, you know, therapist and whatever. And he's going to just feel all this stuff for us. But I just kept saying to myself, I hate the way I feel. And what I liked about it is there was no need to retaliate. There was no need to take them back to the airport. There was no need to do anything. And when I was able to let go of that, the shame of feeling hate towards the people you also love also left. And I'll never forget it because, you know, I hadn't said anything. And I didn't tell them, you know, to stop bickering. And they must have picked up on my vibe. And they said, they just stopped. And they said, what's the matter? And because I let go of my anger at them, and I'd pivoted towards being angry at how I felt, I said this sincerely. Because in my mind, I'd calculated, I don't see them that often. And if I add up all the days that I will see them, I'm probably only going to see them face to face another 50 days before one of them dies. Because I didn't see them that often. And so I said to them, but I was just thinking that I don't see you that often. But can you? I wanted to share that. I don't have no idea what that has to do with what we're talking about. But I think if you can, because what I've discovered is this dark part of myself, when I hate other people and I don't express it, people say, Mark, you're one of the least hateful people I know. It triggers shame in me. Oh, I must be a bad person because I hate them. And then, of course, if I get into hating myself, that's not a good place to be. But if I can just pause and just hate the way I feel. Even on the show, Hurt Less, Live More, I think if we can just feel the hurt and be able to say, I just hate how much it hurts.
Yeah.
So I'm just sharing it with it because it created this interesting space in my brain. So does that make any sense to either of you? Can either of you relate to any of what I just said? Or you could say, no, I can't. Still can't stand my parents, even though they're dead.
Well, I'm not going to say that. What I am going to say, though, let's pick up on this after a break. Time to take a short break now. We'll be back right after this with some more thoughts on leaving that space in our brains to let go of the hate. So we'll be back right after this.
The station that makes you feel good.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and Dr. Mark Goulston, and our guest, Jennifer Hill. Jennifer, what did you think about what Mark was saying just before the break there?
I really resonated with it at a deep level because for me, the self-loathing, the self-hatred is so incapacitating, really. I mean, I think that having felt like an outsider my whole life, and feeling like I couldn't do life right. I felt like no matter how hard I tried to be normal, whatever you want to ascribe that to, I couldn't get it right. I couldn't get marriage right. I couldn't get life right. I just kept screwing up. And so what was the point of it all? What do you think, JJ? How was it for you, what he shared?
I found it much more of a walking through treacle for my life. I first felt the urge, or I first thought about what it would be like to just end it all. I think I was probably around 10 or 11 years old. I was very young, maybe even younger than that. And I remember being in the bathroom, and you know those old razors that, you know, those old ones with the two edges to them that, yeah. I remember looking at one of these and thinking, so I wonder what it would be like just to cut my wrists and say goodbye. And I don't think I would have done it, but certainly the thought was there. And my mother found me and stopped anything that might have happened. She wasn't particularly sympathetic, I have to say, which didn't help. And then, you know, as I grew older, I was constantly battling this feeling of exhaustion and depression. Now, this could have had a physical source because I was born with probably a compromised gut flora and immune system. And, you know, these issues of depression and fatigue and, you know, a whole load of similar things all kind of come in with that, you know, problem with your gut flora. So it could have been partly down to that. But I remember one time I was just paralyzed. I couldn't do anything. And it was like a depression. And I know people have talked about depression being a paralysis, and it really was, not being able to deal with anything, putting on a brave face of it. If anybody had asked me how I was, I'd have said, oh yeah, I'm great, fine, yeah, I'm good. But actually underneath it all, I couldn't put one foot in front of the other. And so I remember one day I wasn't seeing people, I wasn't socializing much, I was just, you know, just staying at home. And I remember one day going through all the different options for how to end it all. I thought, well, I can't go online. I can't move. So maybe I should just opt out altogether. And I went through all the options. And this might sound comical, but I just went through, okay, drowning. No, I couldn't do that. Okay, so, you know, taking pills. No, I couldn't do that. I don't take pills. You know, cutting my wrists. Ooh, that's, you know, no, I couldn't do that. And in the end, did nothing. And maybe that's because I was so paralyzed with depression that I couldn't even take action to end it all. The thing that got me through, like you, Jen, was mentors, was people who could help me, and a growing belief that I had something to offer, that it wasn't right for me to end my life at that point. There was something I was here to do, and I just needed to find a way of doing it. And I did find, I don't do God as such, but I did find, you know, a way into a spirituality or a way of being that really taps into source, as you talked about. And that's been growing and developing ever since. But yeah, I mean, there were, you know, after that time when I was really, really very paralyzed by depression and just thinking there's no point. And that was after, you know, a marriage breakup. Mm. So, you know, these things really do impact us hugely. And also, you know, for most of my life, it's been, I've maybe felt, you know, it's just all too hard because I've been on my own most of my life. It's too hard. But then when you realize that you're not on your own, that there are people out there who can help you and support you, not necessarily physically or, but emotionally and spiritually. And that's when you can manage to see your way through. And I'm in a much better place than I've ever been right now. And that may have something to do with the fact that both my parents have left us now, and I'm kind of free to be myself, because I think a lot of it was also down to feeling that I had to be something I wasn't.
Yeah, I want to share something which I shared in the first episode, and because I think probably my lowest point was in medical school. I dropped out twice. I didn't flunk out, but I dropped out twice, probably for untreated depression. And the second time I dropped out, the school wanted to kick me out because they were losing money. You know, they were losing matching funds, and the business side of me, the non-empathic side of me, would have kicked me out also. You know, that's not the better side of me, by the way. But I could see that, you know, why they wanted to do that. And I met with the head of the school, and I don't even remember the meeting. And I think he was worried that I could do something, you know, when I was told we're kicking you out. And so he sent a note to the dean of students, who cared about students. And I met with him, and or he called me. He said, I have a letter here from the main dean. You need to come in. We'll read it together. And the letter basically said from the main dean, who cared about money, met with Mr. Goulston. We talked about another career, and I'm advising the promotions committee that he be asked to withdraw, which is a, you know, a euphemism for let's get rid of him, because I was somehow miraculously passing. And at that point, the dean of students hit me with what I've referred to as the trifecta of hope. When I asked him, what does this letter mean? He said, you've been kicked out. And it was my good fortune that I didn't complain. I didn't blame. I didn't do anything. I just cratered in front of him. It was like a gunshot wound. It was like I went, whoa. And I felt something wet on my cheekbones. And I'm not really a religious person, but I thought I was bleeding. And I kept looking at my fingers like this. And it was tears. And I think my raw vulnerability, without complaining, blaming, making excuses, just raw vulnerability, what he said to me is, he said, Mark, you didn't mess up because you're passing everything, but you are messed up. But if you get unmessed up, I think this school would be glad they gave you a second chance. And then he hit me with the trifecta of hope, because I didn't think I was capable of doing anything. He said, and even if you don't get unmessed up, even if you don't become a doctor, even if you don't do anything with the rest of your life, I'd be proud to know you, because you have something in you, a streak inside you that the world needs. So that was unconditional love for something in me that I didn't have to perform to get. And he said, and you won't know, that was the first leg. And he says, and you won't know how much the world needs it till you're 35. So he saw a future for me that I didn't see. And then after that, he said, he must have picked up something I was thinking, and he said, look at me, and he pointed his finger at me, and he said, you deserve to be on this planet, and you're going to let me help you.
Yeah.
If he had said, call me if I can help you, I would have gone back to my apartment, and I might not be here today. But that was the trifecta of hope, the unconditional love for something that I didn't have to perform. A future, age 35. And then he said, and then he went to bat for me against the medical school. He was just a PhD. He stood up to the head of the school who wanted to kick me out, the most powerful person. And he basically said, we're giving this one a second chance. So that clicked something in me. And then I took a year off. Worked at a psychiatric foundation called the Menninger Foundation. And then I came back knowing if I could just make it through med school and go into psychiatry, maybe I could do this. And then I just paid it forward for 35 years. You know, unconditionally love my patients, see a future for them that they can't see, and grab them by the nape of the neck with love and say, you ain't going anywhere.
Yeah. Do you know, somebody yesterday asked me whether or who I felt unconditional love for and whether I ever felt I had been loved unconditionally. And I could think of a few examples of the former, but I don't know about the latter. It's funny, isn't it? And yet, I think if throughout my childhood, my early life, if I'd felt that, it would have made such a difference. Letting people know that they are valued and that they deserve a place on the planet, I think is very important, isn't it?
And more than that, JJ, I think what you and Mark just touched on is that that love is not contingent. I think that's what so many of us have love collapsed with, taking action that makes us lovable. If I do this, yeah, I will get a blue ribbon. I will be loved. I will be accepted. Whether it's in a romantic partnership, in a parental child relationship, I think that from a very young age, we're taught that love is conditional. And I think what's so beautifully illustrated is, well, how can we love anybody else unconditionally unless we can love ourselves unconditionally? So I think that's why we so rarely see it in the world, is because it's not something many of us, maybe 1%, if I'm being generous, of the world's population knows how to unconditionally love themselves. Maybe I'll throw the Dalai Lama his name in the hat, and you know, maybe you get there. And then, so how do we begin to have that domino, that ripple effect? And it begins with us. It begins with the loving ourselves unconditionally in order to be able to give the thing that we want to receive.
You know, one of the problems I've always had with that is I don't hate myself anymore. I don't know that I'll ever get to loving myself, but I have something called the Dead Mentor Society. I have 8 mentors. They've all died. Last one was Larry King from CNN, and before him was a Warren Bennis, big leadership guy, going all the way back to that dean at my medical school. And whenever I mess up and want to beat up on myself, I call upon one of my dead mentors. And I've been doing, you know, a lot of guest appearances on podcasts, and I'm very spontaneous. They'll say, you know, it's okay if we edit it. I say, look, I'm the Clint Eastwood of guests, one take. And and every now and then I'll call on one of my dead mentors. And recently, the most recent was Larry King. And I'll say, Larry, I did it again. Wake up. And he'll say, what are you waking me up for? I said, I did it again. I was on a podcast and I kept telling stories. I didn't finish them. You know, I said, here are the 4 most important things you got to remember. And I could only remember 2 of them. And he would say, Mark, I'm hardly cold. You know, you woke me up for this. What'd the host think? Oh, they want to have me back. Mark, put a sock in it already. Would you let me just go back to rest in peace? Would you? And, so I call upon my dead mentors and they can talk me down. And I think part of what it was is I get a little emotional. I hadn't made the connection. Is I think as a child, I didn't want to talk myself down from the pain. I wanted that loving parent to walk through it and talk me down.
Exactly. Yes. And I think I was the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it takes me back to the film, the movie that you produced, Mark, What I Wish My Parents Knew. Even into my middle age and beyond, if my parents ever asked me, how are you? I'd always say, fine, I'm good. Never, ever really talked to them about how I actually was, because I didn't see the point. There was no point.
You know, my first book was called Get Out of Your Own Way. And the first chapter, and it's 43-page chapters, and they're all self-defeating behaviors. And the first one was called Chasing After Love and Approval from a Parent. And at the end of each chapter, they have a usable insight. And the usable insight there was, if you want what you never got from your parent, become your own grandparent. Meaning when my father, you know, who, again, was on the negative side when he developed Alzheimer's, he was having really a rough time with it. And I remember I visited him and he was trying to figure out how to put his slippers on and he wasn't getting it right. And I went to help him. He said, leave me alone. I'll do it. And he was just struggling. And he finally got it right. And then he looked up at me with the eyes of a child, because he didn't have very good parents. And he smiled at me like, I did it. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, tapped him on the shoulder and I kissed him. I said, yeah, you did it, Dad. And so it was a way of giving him what he never received.
Yeah. Yeah. And I found my father had dementia towards the end of his life. And I actually found that that was the time when we could reconcile. That was the point where he and I were able to come together. It was as if the masks had dropped on his side and we could connect. And that was really beautiful. I managed to, you know, get over a lifetime of initially as a younger person, hatred, you know, because of everything that he did to me, right? But it all fell away because I think that's one of the things that happens with dementia, Alzheimer's and dementia. People just lose all these masks and they revert to this just childlike being. Mm-hmm. And yes, there are issues. There are lots of very difficult issues with Alzheimer's, like temper tantrums and that sort of thing. But beyond that, it's before it goes too far, there is that point where they just become, I almost think, their real selves without all those cares that got them when we were growing up, that caused all those stresses.
Yes, and JJ, what if it's our filter we see and hear our parents through? I remember, I'll give you an example of this. What if everything that happens from the moment we're born up until whatever age we are now, we're putting these layers and filters on, almost like putting on a pair of glasses. And if our dad is a jerk or if our mom is not as loving as we'd like, we put a label on it and then we box that person in. And again, from a neuroscience standpoint, our brain can only process at a conscious level 50 to 120 bits of the billions that are hitting us per second. And so that then becomes the filter that we see the person through. And for me and my dad, my experience that completely transformed our relationship while he, thank God, is still alive, I was 25 years old and I had just done a program called Landmark Worldwide. And you looked at filters and you explored what was there for you and the people in your life and who you had separation or distance from. My dad and I had never been close. And in that moment, I had realized that I had a filter that my dad was an a-hole, that he was a jerk. Mm-hmm. And not only did I have that filter, we had agreement, my mom, my sister, my grandparents, you build this kind of agreement wall around the person. And so we had created this like fortress around my dad that he was a jerk. Now, keep in mind, he was a firefighter for 35 plus years, pulled kids out of buildings, things that none of us could ever fathom seeing. And so one day I met my dad and he drinks. He's an alcoholic. He's been that way my whole life. And we would start drinking at around 2 on the days where he wasn't working at the fire department. And I pulled him in the garage where it was like kind of his office space, right? That was his space. It's like 11 a.m. And I said, "Dad, I want to say I'm sorry. I apologize for all the years that I have made you wrong and judged you as being a jerk. I want you to know I love you and I want to know you." And my dad just opened and spilled his heart. He told me about decapitated kids he pulled out of burning cars, the things. And I said, "Dad, I'll never understand why you drink, but I want you to know that's your choice. You can drink or not drink, and I love you. And I accept you."
Yeah.
And that night, I remember, rather than being afraid of my dad when he drank, he broke down in tears. And ever since then, because now I see him through a filter of unconditional love, has anything changed? My dad is still the same man.
Exactly.
Nothing has changed except the filter of just seeing him from a place of unconditional love.
Exactly.
And it really transformed our relationship.
I think that's so true. And yeah. Hopefully one can do that before our parents descend into some kind of dementia. Certainly for me, it seemed easier to do at that point. But let's hold that thought just now. I want to come back to that right after this break. We're just going to take a short break to listen to some more messages from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, Practical Alchemist, and Dr. Mark Goulston, and our special guest today, Jennifer Hill. And just before the break, Jennifer was talking about her relationship with her father and how she transformed that. And it just brought to mind for me how before my father descended too far into dementia, we did have that coming together where he actually apologized to me. He said, "I know that I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, but you don't have to. You can do it properly. You don't have to do it like me." And oh my God, that was such a powerful thing to say. And that's where everything dissolved. Everything fell away. And I thought, he was actually able to say that he loved me. And I was actually able to say it back and mean it, right? Which was huge, absolutely huge. And I'm so glad that we'd had that moment, that we'd had that time, because I didn't see my parents a lot either, Mark, because I lived a long way away from them like you. So it was great to have that time with him.
You know, you reminded me of something. There's a quote I heard. Parents only die so that we can have better conversations with them.
That's terrible and awesome.
It is terrible, but it's also true, right?
and when my father died, because he had had Alzheimer's or dementia for several years, and I can remember he had a massive stroke, and we were in the viewing room, my brothers and my mother and I. And I think, you know, down deep, I had always wanted to hear something from him. And as God is my witness, I'm not hating God right now, so God be my witness. but there we are in the viewing room. And my father was not really, you know, that sort of articulate, insightful. And I remember I kissed him on his forehead, which was kind of rubbery because of, you know, the what they do to prepare someone. And I heard his voice as loud and clear as I'm hearing your voices. And he said, don't treat a big thing like a small thing, and don't treat a small thing like a big thing. Don't do what I did.
Mm.
And something I wanted to share, which fits with all of what we're talking about, I collect quotes, and there's a quote I got from Dr. Shawnee Duperron, and she and Archbishop Desmond Tutu formed Project Forgive and was nominated for a Nobel Prize. And one of their quotes, I think it's my favorite quote of all time, and I've got tons of them, was, "Forgiveness is accepting the apology you will never receive." And when she told me that, this was 25 years after my father died, and my head almost fell off. And I imagined him saying to me, remember when I used to put down stuff that you would say, you'd come up with one of your crazy creative ideas, and I would say, what makes you think that has to do with anything? I was really talking about myself, because what I was good with was numbers, but there was a lot of things I wasn't good with, like relating to you and your brothers and your mom. And I would put down people who would talk about stuff that I didn't feel competent in. And you'd come up with these ideas. And what you've done with your life, the people you've touched, the people you've saved, I don't deserve you as my son. And I'm proud. And I'm sorry. And then that triggered in me my apologizing to him. I said, whoa, I apologize to you for holding a grudge against you. You know, it's been a convenient chip on my shoulder. You know, I'm the psychiatrist in the family. If anyone, I should have known better. And I'm sorry for that. And I can finally say the six words that I haven't been able to say. I love you. I miss you.
Yeah. I don't know about you, Jennifer, but I'm tearing up right now.
I don't have enough tissues for this show.
I know. But how beautiful is that? It's as impactful after our parents move on from this world as it would be when they're still here. We don't have to say these things to somebody's face to feel the impact of it and feel that transformational impact of the words that we use. That's a beautiful story, Mark.
Well, this is now the Cry More, Hurt Less show.
Yeah, officially, we need to change the name, right?
That sounds fairly accurate. And I love, too, if anybody's not familiar with it, the Ho'oponopono prayer where you say, speaking of not needing to say it to somebody, let's say you're in conflict with somebody living or somebody who's passed on. You say out loud every day while thinking of them, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you for being in my life so that I may love you. And I've used that numerous times in many situations and found it to be cathartic. It's like spitting venom when you're very upset with someone. It can be hard to utter those words. Though to your point, Mark, we all carry these grudges. And it's like that, speaking of quotes, it's like that old Buddhist quote, you know, being angry is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. And it really hurts us from the inside out when we harbor grudges and anger and animosity. And that's why my husband and I have a beautiful practice. It's related to Kabbalah every night before bed. It's an ancient prayer called Ribono Shel Olam. And it's about forgiving everyone before you go to bed every night. And in fact, there's a lovely story in the Zohar about it where these men are passing by and there's a man sleeping, kind of like a, you know, vagabond man sleeping on the edge of a cliff. And first a snake comes up and is about to bite him while the man is sleeping. And then a bird comes by and picks up the snake right before it's about to kill him. And then the men are watching and they're astounded. And then the man starts to kind of stretch and yawn. And as he does, he kind of rolls over to the side. And as he rolls over, the rest of the cliff where he just was falls away. And so they saw these two miracles and these rabbis come up to him and say, sir, beg your pardon, but we just saw God or the universe, whatever you want to call it, perform two miracles for you. A bird took a snake that was about to bite you and you rolled away before the cliff just fell out beneath you. What is your secret, sir? And he said, well, I'm just an average man, but every night before I go to bed, I make peace with anyone who has wronged me.
That is beautiful. And if anybody wants to look up and find out more about the power of Ho'oponopono, check out the story of Dr. Lem, who was a practitioner in Hawaii and was a psychiatric hospital, wasn't it, Jennifer? Yeah. And he recited Ho'oponopono. He didn't do anything. He didn't go and visit the patients. He didn't make any guesses as to, you know, how long it would take them to get better or what was wrong with them. He just did Ho'oponopono. And after a couple of years, they had to close the hospital down because all the inmates were able to go home. It's hugely powerful.
Wow.
Chills. Yeah. I didn't know that part of the story. That's
Google it, Dr. Lem in Hawaii. Yeah, I don't know how many years it took, but it took. You know, after a while, they closed down the hospital. Didn't need it. Very, very powerful. So, Mark, we're coming to the end. Unfortunately, once again, it seems like we've only been talking for 5 minutes, but in fact, it has been 45 minutes that we've been talking for. Do you have a last word? I'd love to thank Jennifer for coming on the show. It's such a rich conversation. Thank you so much. Mark, do you have any final thing to say?
Yeah, I have a last word. So this is a distant second in terms of quotes. That forgiveness one is first, but the second one comes from another mentor of mine, Dr. Milton Greenblatt. And it's something to keep in mind. He said, first we're children to our parents, then parents to our children, then parents to our parents, then children to our children. And I'm well on my way to being a child to my children. And every day they remind me how childish I act.
I love it. I love it. Well, keep going. We love that. Keep going. Oh, so thank you so much, Mark. A pleasure as always to be with you. And Jennifer, so fantastic to see you again. Always love what you have to say, such wisdom. But we have to go. It's time for us to leave you. If you are enjoying this show, remember you can access it on whatever podcast channel that you listen to podcasts on these days. You should be able to find it. Just search for Hurt Less, Live More. And do check out the ukhealthradio.com website. There's a magazine there, Health Triangle magazine, that you might be interested in as well. It's a very good read. So do check all of those out. But remember to join us again here next time with Hurt Less, Live More on UK Health Radio. Until then, from me, Mark, and Jennifer, bye for now.